Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and you're very welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I am Frances Nesbitt from Crow and Cottages and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey from Hedgehog Bakery in Thomastown. We're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Mondays from 4 to 5. And while we're live, we'd love to hear from you, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have. The easy way to get in touch with the show by text 086 353 7782. You can call the station on 776-2777 or email kitchengarden@crkc.ie at any stage during the week. Now, on the show today, a busy show again today. We're going to be bringing you the usual food news, nature notes, seasonal recipes, and of course we'll remind you of some jobs to do in the garden around about now. But I'm delighted to say that we'll be joined shortly in the studio by Ger Mullally. He's the chairman of the Savour Kilkenny Food Festival, my favourite festival in Kilkenny. But Mags, how are you?
Great. I'm wrecked, actually. I'm not great. I'm absolutely exhausted.
No, the great was so convincing. You should have just stuck with the great. What has you so tired?
I did bread class this morning. Don't often do bread classes on a Friday, but this was four lovely ladies wanted to have a Friday class, so I did bread class. So I've been talking non-stop from 10 o'clock. Well, I was talking before 10 o'clock, obviously, as well, but from 10 until 3, absolutely non-stop.
About bread.
Well, you know what? All sorts of things, because these things people will chat about life as well, so but mostly about bread. And unusually, there was a biochemist in the audience, so she knew all about the chemistry of sourdough starter, and so she was talking about kind of like enzymes changing proteins and all that sort of thing. And I was trying to concentrate on some of that, even though I wouldn't know it from the past. But and there were real foodies, actually, so you get a mixture of people and stuff, but they had really big grasp on food of all sorts and that. So it was quite a lot of talking, actually. Just a lot of talking. Really nice, and they enjoyed it. They loved it. They might even be tuning in now, some of the Kilkenny ladies.
But they were probably mad keen to learn, were they, if they were into their bread.
And one lady makes sourdough twice a week.
Right.
Another lady used to make a lot of kind of yeasted breads back years ago. So they were mad keen to learn. Last Saturday's class, nobody took a note, and some of them forgot their recipes afterwards. This, they took, like, there was notebooks out. They were really learning, and they were videoing little bits, taking photographs of what it should look like at different stages and that. So they were really into it.
That is exhausting. When people actually want to learn from
you. Well, yeah, that's what you want. I'm not complaining about that, but, you know, you want that. And but 5 hours is just non-stop talking.
I used to do a bit of teaching down in WIT, and I loved the undergraduates because they'd come in and fall asleep and they didn't really care, and they'd get the notes at the end of the year. But when the mature students came in, they just needed to know. No, sorry, I don't understand that yet. Will you explain that again? No, I need to. I was always exhausted. Yes. That was just like an hour-long lecture. Mm. I can only imagine 5 hours of bread.
There you go. So anyway, we made fabulous breads. Everything worked out really well, and they were delighted and very complimentary.
Brilliant.
Luckily, I have another woofer this week, so I have a German girl who is at home cleaning up.
Oh, that's very handy.
It is.
You and your woofers, you're doing very well out of the woofers.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So she's at home cleaning up after the bread class. And more bread classes coming up?
Yes. I have three, I think, coming up in November.
In November. Well, it's a fantastic time of the year to be kind of learning all about food and discussing food and getting to enjoy food, because in front of me here, I have the Savour Kilkenny brochure. And also in front of me, I have Ger Mullally. Hi, Ger. How are you?
Hi, Frances.
Yeah, thanks a million for coming in to us. And it's a fabulous brochure this year. Is it my imagination, or does it get bigger every year?
I think it's a bigger scale and a bigger event every year, Frances. In fact, this year we are going to extend up the Castle Road for reasons of, I suppose, safety and for crowd comfort. I mean, people have found, particularly in the last 3 years, on the parade, it's got so busy in the afternoons of both the Saturday and Sunday that some people find this just too hectic, and we're extending it up the Castle Road. We're not going along the Mayor's Walk this year, because that particular avenue along there was narrow, and while we had lovely food stalls there, people couldn't really stop and look at stuff because there was just a constant train of traffic.
Yeah.
So we've taken those tents move them up along then from the castle gates up along the castle road further. So it'll be more spread out then down on the parade itself. The large marquees will be sort of moved in a little bit and spread a bit more so that people can walk in on the plaza, relax a bit more, and once they're off the streets where cars are, the other streets around. So we think it'll be more enjoyable for people and they'll be more relaxed, and we will have along the Mayor's Walk their tables and chairs for people to get off the thoroughfare, down and relax. So look, we're hoping the weather is good. The forecast looks quite good for next weekend, and like hopefully it's just leaves are falling along there, and people will really enjoy that.
It's a fabulous weekend in Kilkenny, but the last couple of years it has, the volume of people really has increased, and it's a sign of its success. It's a sign of how good it is that there are so many people want to come in and spend time there during the day.
I think so. Well, we've tried to promote it extensively, and this year we actually put every on one Friday there about 2 weeks ago, we put the Saver brochure into every Irish Times in the country. Mm-hmm. Not being elitist with the Irish Times, but it was probably the way we decided to go this year and see how it worked, you know, cost-wise as well. So we think that sort of exposure, and we've got very good publicity in general, I think, across the media, and thankfully to yourselves here and all the local media, it's just been great, the local support, and that's what's, you know, everybody in Kilkenny, you know, we'll get in here, and we want that, of course, more than, you know, people just from the outside. But it's nice to make Kilkenny, I think, the profile is so good at the moment. I mean, being Ireland's foodie destination for 2018 has just enhanced the whole profile of Kilkenny with the two Michelin star restaurants. It's a bit unique, really, when you think about it. I mean, in the past, you would look at places like Dingle and Kinsale outside of Dublin, maybe Galway. But I really think Kilkenny now is it right in that mix. You know, I would certainly feel that it's in the top four or five destinations. We also deliberately select this bank holiday weekend because you don't have many food festivals on. They normally are between April maybe and July.
Yeah.
And we like to think that the Cork Jazz Festival is the only competing event, and the Wexford Opera probably through the whole month at this time of the year. So it's a good time for food because people are thinking about the winter coming up and all that sort of stuff. And
but it's a time that food was traditionally celebrated, though, Ger, because it's harvest time, you know, so the harvest festivals are taking place in a lot of the churches and stuff, and there's plenty of produce to be used at the festival, so I think it's ideal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is the best time, and I suppose we were taking a chance with the weather, right? I mean, having an outdoor event, and the very first Saver festivals were held in restaurants and inside, but once we decided to go on the Parade Plaza about 9 years ago, I think that was the thing then about having weather that would not put people off. See, the first thing we had to think about was stall holders. You have people baking, as Mag speaks about here, from 4 or 5 in the morning. They're up all morning. Mm. They're preparing food. They're taking it in a van to a festival, dragging it into where they're working, maybe having to go back and refill again a few times. So, you know, we have to respect what they're doing. They're the people that are producing, and we like to think that if we're not helping them to have a good weekend, well then the festival isn't successful, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the first thing. So having at least one day out of the two that is dry and fine, and where we're going to get big crowds. But you know what? We've been very lucky the last number of years. I hope we're not
touch wood.
I've seen the forecast, and it looks quite good again for the weekend coming up next weekend.
Often cold, like I've stood in the smallholder's tent the last couple of years. Often cold, but crisp and dry and bright, and that's ideal. You can wrap up against the cold, you know.
That's kind of good eating weather as well, isn't it?
It is, and I think that, you know, the backdrop is just fabulous. Sometimes we just forget about it because we're from here, but when you actually look at the backdrop there, whether it would be winter or whatever, I don't know, it's the limestone on the castle, and the fact the trees and the whole parade area, it's just a nice place. Mm. So, you know, even on a not so good day, it's still a nice place to go to.
Oh, it's the most fabulous setting for a food festival that I know of in the country, and I've done a few of them now as I was travelling around and kind of working at them, and there's always something that you'd learn from each one, but I've never gone to one that I thought was better than Saver. It's definitely my favourite in the country. And now, having a flick through the brochure, there's loads and loads of events on. I don't know whether it would be fair to ask you, is there anything that you'd particularly like to talk about?
No, but I think I just mentioned one thing. I feel that we're extending it to talk about the well-being of people, really, because, okay, it's easy to say it's topical and that, but it isn't topical, it's real, it's reality. Mm. So wellness of body and mind, and what we eat and consume and what we drink and the amounts we drink and eat, all of that, we have to learn more about it. And, you know, I think we're putting an effort into this. The Saver Wellness is sort of our theme in some of the demos. For example, on Thursday night next in Hotel Kilkenny, we have got Brent Pope, David Gillick, Dr. Miriam and Jerry Hussey, and they're experts. Four of them are actually experts in the field of, I suppose, you know, speaking about this area, but also even from a, you know, an educational point of view. The Husseys are absolutely superb. So really, it is a great event. It's on in the Hotel Kilkenny, 7:30 next Thursday night. Book it on SaveLittleKenny.com. We'd really like to see a huge number of people turning out there, because we believe this is a top class quality event. And the same night,
Unlock Your Full Potential
is the title of the event. If you look it up under SaveLittleKenny.com, and you can book it there. There is another event on in the New Park Hotel that same evening with Rosanna Davison and Frances Welsh. And Frances is local, and it's great to see herself and Rosanna teaming up for this event. I think that one is near enough to being sold out, but look at it. If you look up eventbrite.com, that's where you book that one. So those two events are sort of kicking off the whole festival, really. And then as we go into the weekend, I mean, you know, the number of celebrities and chefs and all that we can talk about. I just want to mention one event as well, as a Taste of Kieran Street. It's a local event here that is being, it's a combination of fashion and food, and it's in Kieran Street itself, where there'll be a showcase of fashion with Lady Lauren Emporium, Serendipity, 38 Co Boutique, Mimi, Peaches, Belle, Tiffany, Butterslip, and Dunn Stores. So I hope I have all those names right there. And the local bars and restaurants and cafes, they'll offer culinary delights and drinks during and after the show as well. So
that's on Friday from 4 to 6.
That's on Friday from 4 to 6. But it's something, I think, if you make your way to Kieran Street, you should enjoy, because you've got a mixture there, and that's good.
And one of the things I love about the Savour Festival is that most of the events, virtually all of the events, are free. So the ones that, so that Kieran event, Kieran Street event, is free.
It is.
The Unlock Your Full Potential with Brent Pope and so on, tickets are €25 for that one, and they're available on SaveKilkenny.com. And it's €15 for the Rosanna Davidson and Frances Welsh from the Honest Project in the New Park on Thursday, from 6 to 9, and that's €15. And details are on SaveKilkenny.com. You can get the tickets there on Eventbrite, link from the website.
What's caught my attention actually is there's a sports injury clinic, so you can get a 15-minute screening with a physio. It's in the KBC on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
And then there's a food clinic, so you can have a 20-minute consultation for free. You just need to book those.
Yeah, I think they're great events. And,
they're,
you know,
really
Laura Langton is, as you know, a famous Kilkenny name, and Laura is one of the Langtons. And basically, she is very much setting out on her career and doing very well. And we've also got Jackie Varley on the other event you mentioned, and that's all in the KBC Bank, which is on the parade. And that, I think that's going to be exciting for the weekend, because you have a lot of advice, good advice, available there to you if you just get in there and you know, make your appointments if needed there. Look up SaveLittleKenny.com as well.
Yeah, you have to book it.
Play to the lads from KBC and coming in and supporting that, because and that's all around Savour, your wellness that you were talking about there, Ger. And
it is.
Jeannie Maltese and Tom Coleman, they're there as well with food from the Amazon. So some South American food crops that they'll be showcasing there too. No, that's super. And lots for kids to do as well, of course. I know it's Martha, my daughter's favourite festival in Kilkenny as well. She loves to go in and wander up and down the parade and have her traditional taste of kangaroo from the kangaroo meat man.
He's there again. He's going to be there in the same spot, because we know people get used to where people are. So yes,
exactly,
you start off there. He's number three up on the right as you enter the place. Yeah, lots of stuff there, Franz. I mean, you've got the Dacia Medieval Group with Viking Life. They'll be showing their wares there and in the Kilkenny Castle Park. You've got the Young Producers Market in McDonough Junction. You've got all these
Now, the Young Producers Market in McDonough Junction, that's always a big hit.
I mean, the kids, they go to such effort. I mean, they go to such effort to prepare, you know, whether it's cupcakes or whatever it is. But they just
I had a participant in it last year. My teenager did it last year, actually.
She
really brought the kitchen in, to be honest.
Did she make a fortune?
Well, I don't know. She spent a fortune on ingredients, I know.
But they sell out. I mean, they do. They sell out, and they're so proud of what they have there. And
they are.
McDonough Junction have been on board now for the last number of years, and it's an annual event. Olivia Goodwillie is launching a book, and another cookbook that Olivia is doing. We've got Pumpkin Patch Pottery, Ready Steady Cook, Duck Race, actually, which is from Lady Desert Bridge, John's Bridge, and that is on Sunday, and that is actually for the Lions Club appeal. So, you know, we'd like to partake with other groups in Kilkenny when we can. And it's fortuitous that the Lions Club contacted us about that. So that's taking place there, duck race down to John's Bridge. So 2 o'clock on Sunday, that's on. So
the Lions Club do fantastic work every year. They really do. And they've a superb wine tasting that happens around Christmas time, and all the money from that goes to charity as well. So fair play to them.
Look out for the gramophone. It's a huge, big gramophone, a monstrous gramophone. It's going to be there all the weekend. Look out for that, and you'll see it around the castle.
Sounds like you won't miss that, really.
You won't miss it. No, it's just great. And again, the kids will really get a kick out of all of this. And I think the animals are going to be there as well, Francis.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have animals. You've been there in helping with all of that stuff as well. And I know you're having your own event. And that reminds me, there are many events around the county. You're having one in Dunamagan, butchery event.
Yeah.
And we've got in Callan events. We've got in Castlecomer and Thomastown. And I think it's just brilliant. If you take, for example, in the Callan event, we have Keogh's Bakery having a tour of historical bakery. I wouldn't call it historical. They mightn't like that, but it's just great that they're there so long and they're having a tour there. And of course, in the famine workshop, the old workshop in Callan, the famine bowl, Eitan Holen and her sister are having a visual on what all that's about there on the Monday as well. So there's a lot going on.
I've seen that famine bowl, and really just to look at it, it just makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up when you think that how many people must have been fed out of this large bowl of pottage, and that was all that stood between them and starvation really back in the day. It's incredible. And Eitan is a tour de force out there in Callan in terms of promoting the food and the cultural events in Callan. But Billy Keogh is a fantastic looking man, and Keogh's Bakery in Callan is well worth a visit. If you've never been out to Keogh's Bakery in Callan, definitely pop along there, and you can order birthday cakes and all sorts of stuff.
And I think you've got to book some of those, so please look at saverkilkenny.com, because we're having a nice ad lib conversation here, but I hope I don't send people to a door where they say it's been booked for 3 weeks. So just have a look at saverkilkenny.com.
But there are brochures all over the city, so I recommend that people pick up this gorgeous brochure of the Saver Kilkenny Festival. Sit down with a cup of tea before the event happens and pick out some events that might interest you, and then go on to saverkilkenny.com and see if tickets are required. Book them there. Most of them are free. And I see our own Edward Hayden there on the front with the happy pair shouting and laughing and joking about something with a couple of pumpkins in front of them. I'm Edward doing most of the emceeing again.
Yes, himself and Siobhan Donoghue are MCs, so we're happy to have those and delighted. One of the things there that I think will be a great event for Edward MCing is the O'Connells of Colahill.
Yes.
And you know, when you think about what they've given to Irish food, we're so proud to be able to honour them, and it's the first such event. So everybody knows Doreen Allen, they know Rory O'Connell, they probably know Blanna Berrigan, but there are other brothers, I think Patrick, they're butchers. There are many of the O'Connells, and that lady reared all that family after her husband died. They're from Colahill, and we're just going to honour the family and the mother and father, obviously, on Saturday
at half one the Marble Kitchen on the parade.
Yeah, and I think that's a great event, and I think it's
lovely,
just
lovely.
It's great for us. I know they're over the border niche, but what are borders? They're nothing. Yeah. They're just out the road, and it's great. Mary Langton is from County Leash. She's on our committee, so she insisted on bringing this in. So we're absolutely delighted that it has turned out to be, you know, something that is going to happen.
No, I'm sure you get a huge crowd for that, and they're lovely, lovely people, each well known and well respected in their field. So Rory O'Connell has a huge following. Dorina, of course, and all very, very well respected. And if you want to know how a cafe runs and how you might make some money out of it, Blanna Berrigan, there's no better woman. She's turned an awful lot of businesses around in the country. She really knows her stuff.
Can I just say as well, Francis, for the first time we've got JP McMahon of Annie Air in Galway, and you know, Galway has been huge in food, and I think JP has done an awful lot over there. He's got Michelin stars, and I think it's great to have him here, and you know, he's going to bring a little flavour of what is he doing in the West to us. It's the first time also we have Kevin Thornton. I think we've got a fan of Kevin Thornton's here in the studio, so it's the first time he's going to be here. It's the first time for Brent Pope for that event on Thursday evening. So we've had others before, like the Happy Pair, Kevin Dundon's, Dominic Peaches Kemp, David Gillick, Rosanna Davison. They've been here before. I'd like to also say that Eugene McSweeney, should I say,
yes,
who was the first restaurant on the Dublin Road, Lacken House, for many, many years I was there. It was the sort of pilot restaurant, we call it, good restaurant in Kilkenny.
Yeah.
And Eugene, we wanted to honour Eugene and he's still involved very much in the food business, but we just wanted to have Eugene do a demo for Saver Kilkenny.
Very
so
good.
Himself and Breda had run a fabulous restaurant there A number of years ago.
Yeah, it was a forerunner to all of the kind of really good restaurants that we had now. Lacken House was very, very, very well respected. And we've had Eugene in on the show last Christmas giving tips to people on the Christmas dinner. He's an absolute gentleman and a master chef. He really is one of the master chefs. Now, listen, we need to go to the ads, but Ger, fabulous brochure, fabulous lineup again. Congratulations to you and all of the committee, because it's not just yourself. There's a committee of people there helping and loads of volunteers.
Yeah, I'd like to say that we have a small committee, because I don't believe, or none of us believe, in having a committee of 8 or 9 or 10 people. I think it's better of a small committee, but we have people, many people helping out, yourself and Mags here and many others involved in the food business around Kilkenny help out, and we have loads of volunteers to come along for the weekend to help out, because it is a big event, but if people just like to get involved in it, and that's what we wanted, so we prefer to do it this way, and people are more than happy to get involved and be part of it.
And fair play to Marion Flannery again for all of her sterling
Marion is superb. I mean, yeah. I think she's made it a national event, and we're actually looking forward to brighter things in the future that we've in the plans.
Brilliant. Well, Ger, congratulations again, and SaverKilkenny.com is where you'll find all of the details and pick up a copy of the Saver Kilkenny brochure. It's in just about all of the food outlets in town. But we better take an ad break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes after these.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I am Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey from the Hedgehog Bakery, and we're live today, Friday, from 4 to 5. You can send in any questions or comments that you might have by text to 086 353 7782. Or you can call the station 776-2777 or email during the week at any stage, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. That's a fantastic lineup they have
ready
for Saver, isn't it?
There's loads for everybody.
Brilliantly run. Like, Ger just does a great job there chairing the committee, and always something new every year. You'd wonder how they kind of come up with the innovative
and they kind
ideas.
Of move with the times as well. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of health and well-being this year and that and some very interesting characters coming to visit.
Yeah, and they kind of moved on from just the standard demo, you know, a couple of years ago when it kind of had we'd reached peak food demo. They got a bit more entertaining and stuff. It's always very, very good. So a great day out in Kilkenny. If you're around at all, you should head along to that 25 to 29 of October. The Saturday and Sunday tend to be the really busy days.
The big days for the market.
Now, in food news, you've heard of the caveman diet, I presume, have you?
Yes.
You know, so we should all go back and eat the stuff that you could kind of pick and forage, and things started to go wrong with our metabolism when we started to drink milk and all of that kind of crack. Well, there is some truth in some of the pseudoscience behind that, in that not all of us are suited to eating all kinds of foods. So depending on your DNA makeup, some people have an intolerance for lactose, for example, and so on. Well, Waitrose have moved into this now, and in the UK, what they're trialling is a new technology that lets shoppers in some of their stores choose food that's actually based or suitable to their DNA. They're talking about reducing kind of type 2 diabetes development, but basically what happens is that you go into a shop and you're given an on-the-spot genetic test using a saliva sample, and then it shows you food products that you should choose with a big green thumbs up and food products which you should avoid with a kind of red thumbs down. I think, like, it sounds gimmicky, but I think that's remarkable how we're kind of now, isn't it?
That's kind of into the whole realm of somebody will know more about you than you know about yourself, which is a little bit scary.
Well,
but it is our future.
Yes, it is the future.
A computer, or, you know, systems will know more, will know what we're thinking before we've actually worked it out ourselves.
Yep.
They'll know what preferences we have based on our eye movement looking at a screen. So yeah, it's kind of scary though.
I have to say,
it wouldn't make me race to Waitrose.
No, but, well, I think if there was something that you were unsure about, and, you know, a lot of people think, I'm not sure whether I can eat that, like, later I tend to feel a bit bloated and blah, 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 blah. Now you can go in and, like, have science back it up, or tell you, no, actually, it's just your imagination. But it was a story that jumped out at me during the week.
Well,
I thought it was
interesting.
Fantastic.
Interesting so and scary.
I wonder how long it'll be before Super Value are offering a similar
service for the moment
in Loughboy here in Kilkenny. Now, this week, I had a very busy foodie week.
Did you?
Thanks for not asking. I was at the launch of Gil Miller's ex of River Cottage, or no, still at River Cottage. I was at the book, his Irish book launch, for a second book, Time, up in the Green Barn in County Kildare. Fabulous place. Have you been?
I think it was with you once.
Burr Townhouse.
Yeah.
It's a superb, superb place. And James and his wife do a fantastic job. And Dermot, that was in talking to us a couple of weeks ago, Dermot was there picking the veg on the night. But a very successful, huge crowd. And
were these guys, they had a dinner.
There was a dinner, a sit-down dinner that was kind of like the usual kind of tasters beforehand, and then a sit-down dinner, and there was a little kind of speech by Gil as he brought out the book. I got a little interview with him, so I might bring that in next week, and we might listen to Gil talking a bit about his book, and I've picked out a couple of recipes for the time of the year, so we might talk a bit more about that next week. But it was a lovely event and a fabulous place if you fancy a bit of a road trip up to the Green Barn in County Kildare.
It's near Athy, am I correct?
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Yeah, it's just off the motorway. So like 30 minutes from Kilkenny, not even. And then, of course, last Saturday was the Lavistown House Mushroom Hunt, the annual mushroom hunt. I don't know how long Olivia and Roger have been doing this for now, but it could be 20 years. It could be longer even, 30 years maybe. And I went along, I'd missed last year's. I was at a couple before that. We went on one year, and there's the same faces. People show up year
That's
after
hilarious.
Year, isn't it?
Yes,
like
I hope they keep doing
friends.
That at bread classes for like the rest of the next 20 years.
I was
just for the social scene, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I was chatting to people that I hadn't seen in 2 years, and was like,
that's gas.
And then we go off looking for mushrooms. And of course, new people every year then on it as well, and there were a couple of kids along this time.
You got quite a wet day.
It was miserable. We got so
but you
wet.
Know what, you needed a little bit of rain, sorry for the mushrooms, but maybe not that much, but
not that day either. So it lashed rain on the Saturday while we were doing the mushroom hunting, so I'd say by Tuesday it would have been a great day for mushrooms.
Maybe,
But no, we found lots, and the usual questions about can you eat that, and then the lads went back to Lavistown House and cooked up any of the edible ones so that people could kind of try them as well. And a delicious lunch out at Lavistown. And the gardens at Lavistown House are looking amazing. We must have Des in, actually, Olivia's son-in-law, who's working on the gardens out there now, and he runs regular garden classes, and the garden looks fabulous.
Great, good. I haven't been there for a couple of months, actually.
It's a really lovely place. Now, so that's all of the food news this week, unless you've anything to add to that?
No, well, I have to mention my raspberries. The autumn fruiting raspberries are absolutely amazing. Literally can't pick them fast enough.
And they're still going.
They're still going. Like this week, at least three large bowls in the last like couple of days. And there's still more. I'd say we'll get another week out of them. So I have one chest freezer, which is actually full of raspberries.
Oh, my God.
But I've made a couple of things as well, actually, with them. And the woofer actually made a big German apple and raspberry cake thing.
Do they mind that you just called them the woofer the whole time?
No, she doesn't,
here,
actually.
Do you shout at her here,
no,
woofer?
No, I don't. I'm really nice to her.
Woofer, get
she's
out
a very
there
nice girl, actually. But I think she must think she's moved to La La Land, actually, because it's kind of a busy week of all sorts of things, and she's quite structured German.
Ah, yes. Not that we're being stereotypical.
No. And she's so helpful, and she's done, like, she's doing great work, but, and she loves baking and loves cooking, so, and likes having dinner ready when I come home in the evenings.
So raspberries are actually on the list of jobs to do in the garden today. So your autumn fruiting raspberry, as soon as they're finished fruiting, it's time to prune them. And you can actually take cuttings from those prunings.
Oh, you can take cuttings, yeah. But the autumn ones, you actually, I think you prune those in February.
No, anytime between now. Anytime over the winter. Once they're finished fruiting, you can cut them all the way to the ground.
Okay.
And I was hoping to get a few cuttings from you, actually.
Yeah. I've offered cuttings to somebody else because they're so good, and it's so nice to have them after most fruit is gone, really.
So maybe next week we could talk about how to take a successful cutting and get it to root. Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Okay, let's do that. But they're still giving.
They're still giving, brilliant. Yeah. The courgettes are still flowering, which is quite amazing actually, and still producing courgettes. We used courgettes in the bread class today from the garden, which is, they've been fruiting since, producing since the end of July. That is quite, isn't it?
It is. Have you had any frost up in Chapel Hill?
A little bit, but not very much.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem to be, they're slowing down all right, like much slower, but even still, still nice to get them. Runner beans are finished, they've gone. We dug those up and gave them to the pigs.
I've seen a touch of frost on the dahlia leaves, all right. The poor old dahlias are looking a bit sad and sorry now. And it, depending on where you have them, but in areas that maybe the frost settles just a little bit deeper. So at the bottom of the walled garden, I have... The frost kind of rolls downhill. And there's a little area at the bottom of the garden where, although it gets sunshine, the cold air kind of settles there to the height of the wall.
Oh,
so you
yes,
can imagine, like
yes,
the cold air, of course, will drop down.
Yeah.
And there were a few dahlias there outside the potting shed. And their leaves blackened. They were the first ones to blacken. So
oh,
the frost
okay.
kind of touched them first. But it'll be soon time to kind of take them in.
But there's, like, you still probably have flowers, do you?
Oh, loads of flowers.
Yeah,
loads
they're actually,
man,
some of them are quite late, but they're newish. There's still flowers on them. I am getting a bit nervous about them, though, now. I'm just going to cover some of them outside and bring in the ones that are in pots.
Well, generally what I'd do is wait until the kind of frost comes along and blackens the leaves, and then I'll just cut off all of the green stems and take up the tubers, allow them to dry on a table in the potting bench, and then clean them as best I can without getting them wet. So just brush off any excess soil and so on. And then they go into a paper bag and they're stored in the potting shed for the winter.
Okay.
And that's it. And then next spring they'll get potted out again. We're racing through our garden jobs already.
We have other things to talk about as well.
Now, I know you wanted to talk about, we've had some spectacular skies here in Kilkenny over the last couple of weeks.
We've had amazing skies.
Amazing. Really?
I have small children, well, not small, but not 8-year-old or 10-year-old, who actually will mention the sky because the colour is quite spectacular in the evenings in particular.
Very dramatic pinks and reds, yeah.
Some really beautiful morning skies. And morning, yesterday morning actually, there was a fog or mist right across the valley, and you could just see like little knolls of wooded wood popping up and little hills over it, and it was quite spectacular looking. And then the sun above it, I was coming down from the hill down, it was quite spectacular. But do you know why the sky is blue?
Why is the sky blue?
Do you actually know why it is blue?
I do, but the listeners don't.
Just checking. A long time ago, back in, there was a man called John William Strutt.
He didn't paint it now, don't
No, he didn't paint it and stuff. He was a 19th century physicist, and he actually won a Nobel Prize for some of his work for discovering the element argon. But really what I suppose he's more famous for is discovering a thing called Rayleigh scattering. So the sun is sending its rays towards the earth, and light is broken up into different colours, as we know. But the light scatters into different colours based on the molecular content of the atmosphere. So based on what's floating around in the atmosphere. And
so if somebody gets a marble or a prism and shines white light on it, or the sun shines in through the window on their prism, they'll see that it breaks up into the rainbow. So
the
you
rainbow,
get all
yeah.
of the colours of the rainbow coming
yeah.
out of that. So
yeah.
all of those colours added together make up white light.
Yes.
And so that's what's hitting us from the sun.
Yes.
But then something strange happens in the atmosphere.
Yes. So the different colour rays kind of break up. They have different wavelengths,
mm-hmm.
I think. Is that right?
Yep.
There's so red at one end of the spectrum, and then you have blue and violet at the other end. And the blue and violet have the shortest wavelengths, so they break up faster. So that's why it appears blue. Although apparently it appears violet, but because of our eyes, the physiology of our eyes, we see it as blue. So I don't think that, like, that's a bit of a kind of philosophical question. You know, if we see it blue, is it not blue? You could think about it like that, couldn't you?
You could. So all of the colours are there, but some are just hidden to us, and so what we see
yes.
is blue in the sky.
Yes.
Except in the evening or early morning, where the sunlight has to travel through an awful lot more atmosphere to get to us. So when it's overhead, you think about it, it goes through the thinnest amount of atmosphere to get to us. But when the sun is early morning or late evening, it has to come through a much thicker blanket of atmosphere to get to us. And then something strange happens. Isn't that right, Max?
That's right. Do you want to tell us about that then?
So a lot of the...
Well, it's hitting the earth then at a different angle.
Yes.
So it's going to break up differently.
Exactly. So we tend to see more of the reds and the oranges and the pinks.
Pinks, exactly.
So that's why the sky looks so dramatic at that time of the night.
But in autumn, do you ever think that the sky looks bluer in autumn?
Actually, it does, doesn't it? It does seem to, above the trees.
It does, doesn't it? And you see, like, there's some really spectacular clear blue skies at the moment. Why do you think that is?
You should stop asking me those questions, because I feel obliged to answer you then.
Do you know why that is? There's less humidity in the air. And there's less cloud and less haze and less fog, so that's one thing. But also, the foliage, the colour of the foliage. If you went home and picked up a gold leaf or an orange leaf and put it up against your sky, when you put that up, the sky will actually seem brighter blue just because of the contrast, and because colours at either end of the rainbow or the prism kind of enhance each other. So that's another. So the colours that are on Earth, so the colours in the woodland and the hedges and everything, are actually enhancing the blueness of the sky.
Contrast enforcement, or contrast enhancement. Isn't that it?
Yes.
So when you look at the yellows and browns and stuff, the blue above it seems even bluer.
It kind of pops the colour.
Really does, yeah.
And also because the sun is dipping in the sky, so it's not above us, it's dipping in the sky, so it's breaking up slightly differently. So the blues are a bit more stronger, because it's hitting the earth at a different angle.
Ah.
Yeah, so it's going through different... like you were talking about evenings and that, so kind of a similar. So it's interesting, isn't it?
You should get out in the mornings and get out in the evenings and enjoy them while it's clear and bright. And I'd say there'd be a nice one tonight now, because the sky seemed pretty clear out there as well.
There's been some spectacular night skies too, actually. Some really spectacular stars.
Now, we better take another ad break, and coming up after that, we'll talk a little bit more about stuff to do in the garden. I want to finish part two of our How to Prune Your Apple Trees guide, and then some more jobs for people to do this week. We'll be back just after these. Text us on 086 353 7782.
Kitchen Garden is sponsored by the Artisan Food Retailers of Kilkenny.
And you're welcome back to the Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt from Crowan Cottages in Kilkenny, and I'm joined by Mags Morrissey from the Hedgehog Bakery in Thomastown. And it's the final part of the show. You can still get in touch with us by text to 086 353 7782 or email at any stage during the week, kitchengarden@crkc.ie. And if you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday from 4 to 5, the email is the way to go. Now, we have had some questions in after the introduction that we did to pruning last week, so pruning apple trees. Some very specific questions came in via email, actually, so I got back to those as best as I...
Will you do my pruning sort of things?
No? Pretty much. I have an ancient apple tree. I don't know the variety, but we call it Apple, or we call it Adam. Will you... You know, very, very specific ones. So, very briefly, what we were saying last week was that it's the ideal time of the year now for your apples and pears to give them a prune. Leave the plums alone for now, because over winter they can get a nasty infection into any exposed cuts, but apples and pears are fine. And last week we talked about getting a bit of shape on the tree, so remove any of the suckers that are coming up from lower down on the trunk, remove any of the suckers or growth that's coming from the rootstocks. Most apple trees, the top of the apple and the roots of the apple tree aren't related, they're grafted onto each other. So the roots maybe could come from a different type of tree, and the apple is a scion that's cut from a particular apple tree, so that you're certain that the apples that come from that are exactly the same as the parent tree, and the rootstock controls the growth of the tree. So you use a blackthorn rootstock, for example, it will limit the size of the apple, the tree.
Yes, that makes sense.
So like a lot of roses, they're grafted onto a rootstock, and the rootstock is there just to deliver nutrients and water up to the apple tree. It's also easier then to procreate the various apple trees that you like. Okay, so remove any of the suckers that come from that rootstock, because even though it may be from a different type of apple, it won't produce fruit that's kind of true to the apple tree that you're growing.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've got a bit of shape on it. We've removed any of the suckers that are coming from the trunk. We've removed any of the suckers coming from the rootstock. We've removed any damaged wood. We've removed any branches that are crossing over each other or kind of rubbing against each other. Now we want to kind of start getting a bit of shape on the tree.
And is there a way that you're when you're pruning, when you're cutting, is there a particular way that you should be doing that?
Yes, so for small branches, a hand secateurs is the ideal way to go, and then use a loppers, so that's the longer kind of secateurs for the thicker branches, and make sure it's sharp. So make sure it's clean and make sure it's sharp, because if you do a nice clean cut, you're less kind of surface area exposed, less likely to get canker or some other kind of infection into the tree.
And you're cutting at an angle?
Always. I try to cut as much as I can so that rainwater will flow very quickly off the exposed surface. So don't cut it kind of flat horizontal, because then water will sit on top of that or can get down in between the bark and the hardwood of the tree and can cause you problems.
Okay.
So tend to cut it at an angle or cut it vertically down if you can, ideally, and that will get the water kind of like off the exposed surface as quickly as possible. And when you're pruning, prune as close back to the... when you're pruning those excess growths off, prune as close back to the parent branch or to the trunk as you can. So don't leave any sticky outy bits.
Yeah, okay.
Because all that's going to happen on those little sticky out bits of branches is that more growth will come along. So where you've taken off one branch because it was in the wrong place, if you don't cut it right the way back, you might get 5 or 6 branches in a couple of years. So now we want to get some shape on the tree, and the ideal shape for any kind of fruit tree or fruit bush is what they call a bowl shape. So that's where the branches are kind of coming up like a wine glass or a breakfast bowl. So the branches are all the way around, and in the center there is nothing really, except maybe a leader for some particular types of tree, but ideally nothing, so that there's plenty of air and light getting in on all of the branches, nothing is crossing over each other, they're not going to cause any damage, and it's easy to pick the fruit.
Okay.
So that's what they consider to be the ideal.
I probably have about 2 days' work, so...
Right. Well, from that then, you see it's easy to kind of pick off the fruit and they're not going to get damaged. So now we need to decide... So that's the general shape that's on the tree. But now we need to decide whether your apple variety is a spur-bearing variety or a tip-bearing variety. There's two distinct growth patterns for the apples. So a spur-bearing variety bears its fruit on small little stubby side shoots off most of the branches. And most apples and pears that we grow in the garden would kind of fall into that category. So the little tiny branches come off, and then the flowers and the fruit form on those. And what we want to do with those is that we want to cut back the previous year's growth on all of the main branches by about a third. And you want to cut back to a bud. So you always cut back to a bud, leave the bud in place, and you cut back to a bud that's facing in the direction that you want the branch to kind of grow in.
That makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
So then the bud will continue to grow in the direction of that branch.
Okay.
And then you can shorten any kind of side shoots or additional kind of growth on that to about 5 buds. So you're cutting back these big, long lengths of apple, which grew just in the last year, so they can put on an awful lot of growth. You want to take that back to about 5 buds. And you'll notice a dramatic difference in the shape of the tree, you know, after that, because you've taken off an awful lot of these little willowy kind of shoots and so on. But that won't impact on the harvest for next year. Now, on the tip-bearing varieties, I have a couple of these out at Crowan. These are where the apples form right on the end of the tip of the what are called the laterals, or the tiny little branches. So you need to be a bit more careful with these, because if you cut off all of those laterals, you won't get any apples next year. They're a bit more delicate, these, as well. And when you think about it, the small little lateral holding the apple on the end of it, they're kind of prone to break.
So they will obviously hang over then when the fruit is growing.
Yes, they tend to have that kind of falling habit. So what you want to do is you want to leave any of the laterals that are around a foot in length, you want to leave those alone, because they'll be strong enough next year to sustain the weight of an apple.
Okay.
And then more vigorous side shoots, so anything that's grown much, much longer than that, can be lightly pruned back, but again, just above a bud, and that will encourage more tips to form next year, and from those, you'll get more fruit.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Now, and the
Can
other
you
thing.
Repeat all that.
If you just went at your tree and took off all of the dead and damaged wood, and took off any of the branches that cross over each other, and took off any of the suckers, and then took out any of the branches that are on the inside which prevent you getting at the apples, if you did nothing more than that, your apple tree would be happy and would thank you for it. But bear in mind one little proviso: don't do too much in one season. So if you go hacking away at an apple tree and take off half of its growth or half of its branches, you can stress the poor tree.
Oh.
And a stressed plant is not a happy plant. And when a plant's not happy, that's when it can develop diseases. So don't go anywhere near kind of like a quarter of the growth of the tree or anything like that.
So you just do a little bit every year.
You could do a little bit every year. So if you found that of your apple tree, there are six big branches on your apple tree and three of them you don't want anymore, let's not go after all three this year. Take off one of them, do your general tidy on the other branches, and then next year you could maybe take off two of the remaining branches, because and then you're spreading out the kind of stress over a couple of years. And with fruit trees, anybody I think who has planted an apple tree and enjoyed the fruit from it, something happens, it changes your how you think about things from the garden. It's not sow a seed and harvest in a few weeks, it's sow a tree and harvest in 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years. So you start to think that little bit longer, I think.
Yes.
So I'm happy to go up to the orchard and start pruning the tree, knowing that I won't see the benefit of this pruning until next year or maybe even the year after that. Yeah. But it's a job that kind of needs
yeah.
doing.
Yeah.
I love pruning. I absolutely love
it. I think we kind of picked that one up.
We should maybe do a visit out to Crowan. People could come out and watch me pruning my apple trees. I absolutely love it. Now, there's lots of other jobs to be doing in the garden this week. You're going to continue harvesting your raspberries, are you?
I'm going to continue with the raspberries. Beetroot actually are looking pretty good, so I'm going to bring in some beetroot and do some pickling. That's on my list. I've been using the beetroot all the time, but just not for pickling and that. I've got some gorgeous little turnips, little swedes, which are really nice now, actually. And you can even eat them. Remember I was talking about this maybe a year ago, so when they're really small, you can actually eat them raw. And they kind of have a kind of a turnipy sweety flavour, obviously, but a little sweetness. But yeah, I've been harvesting those. They're quite nice. The lettuce is still growing faster than you can eat it. And there's a few other bits and pieces, some scallions.
Are you going to be pickling any courgette this year?
I've done that.
You've done it already?
I've done some fermented courgette, actually, that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. So that's done. Yeah, it's nice. It is nice, actually. And I've pickled cucumbers.
Pickle chilies this year. I brought in some chilies last year and we talked about pickling chilies. I'm not going to do it this year because I still have loads of last year's pickled chilies to use up. And dried chilies. I have an abundance of chilies.
But you kind of like fresh ones, don't you?
Yeah. When they're available, I tend to use them.
Yes,
but I've lots and lots of kind of preserved ones still there. But it's kind of a busy time of the year now in the garden. Like if you have a nice, dry, bright day, there's plenty to be doing when you get out there. Have you any carrots still in the ground?
Oh, there's still some carrots in the ground. But there's carrots that were there, like they literally have grown about 2 inches.
They're tiny.
They were planted just before the heat wave and they didn't really, even though they were watered once, twice a day, they really didn't grow. But they're actually really sweet.
Yeah.
But they're so small, like for cooking with them, they're a bit of a pain. You'd kind of eat them out there.
They look good on a plate, the tiny, tiny carrots.
Yeah, they're kind of funny looking because they're a little bit fat. But short.
Oh, stubby.
Stubby kind of
little stubby carrots.
Yeah, okay. And with long roots, obviously, when they were trying to survive.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Oh, so they sent down a really long taproot to try and find some water.
Yeah, they did. Oh. They were picking weeds, though, in the heat of the summer, and like a little weed that might be kind of an inch high, and then it had like a 6-inch little root.
Desperately trying to find water,
and then I just pluck it up.
Yeah, well, that's a weed. That's what you need to do. But if you've any longer or bigger carrots out in the garden, it's not a bad idea to kind of get them up. I have left them in the ground over winter before, but generally what you find is that they get those, you know, the black marks that looks like a worm has kind of like been munching into the side of them. That's the carrot root fly grub.
But apparently, once you disturb the ground, you're more likely to get the fly, so you should pick them all together.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're taking them up, take them all up now. And you can store them in sand, in like a shed or whatever. They store quite happily in there, so long as the rodents won't get near them. But they store much better inside, and they'll look much better than when you go to use them. Time to get rid of the tomato plants if you still have them in your greenhouse or your polytunnel. You're not going to get anything else from them, so it's time to get rid of those now. If they don't look like they've been affected by blight, they can go onto the compost heap, but if they look a bit blighty and a bit sorry for themselves and a bit brown or whatever, they tend to go onto the bonfire at Charlie's birthday out in my place, which is in November, so burning is the way to kind of get rid of those. And then we've already talked about pruning your autumn flowering or your autumn fruiting raspberries, and I want to get a couple of those cuttings off you if I can. And then now's a good time to lift, divide and replant rhubarb crowns if it hasn't been done for 4 or 5 years. So they get very, very big. They can tend to get a bit kind of tired even if you feed them every year. So lifting them and dividing them gives them a new kind of like energy, a new kind of lease of life.
I might do that actually, because mine are kind of slightly under a hedge.
Now, it's not easy. Because they put down massive big roots and they really get themselves kind of established. So you have to go at it like quite vigorously and be a bit kind of ruthless when you're hacking into them. And then just give them a split with a sharp spade, and then you have two plants from the price of one.
Okay.
If you're not dividing your rhubarb plant, now is the time of year though to put a big heavy feed on top of it. So all the leaves should be gone at this stage. Any of the bits that are kind of left, you can kind of pull them away. And then some well-rotted compost or well-rotted farm manure. Loves manure.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
A nice big blanket of manure on top of it. That'll all be worked into the soil by the spring, and your plant will thank you with massive amounts of growth next year. Don't let them get dry if you have done the split and you're putting in new plants now. And then, I'm not a big fan of it myself, but if you're into your summer bedding in borders, now is the time to kind of be getting rid of all of that. It'll be dying off anyway. And a lot of people then will replace that with winter flowering, kind of pansies and polyanthus and wallflowers and stuff like that.
And it's the time to plant sweet pea if you want to plant sweet pea for next. Loads of them actually.
Organised this year.
But they're about, I don't know, 7 inches maybe.
Wow. High and stuff, you should get early flowers on those next year.
Yeah, you should do.
Now, we've run out of time in the kitchen garden for another week. Well done to Mags for having stayed awake and survived the show after her exhausting teaching earlier on today. You can stay in touch with us during the week on Twitter. I'm at Nesbitt F, or Mags is at Mags Morrissey. And of course, you can email the show kitchengarden@crkc.ie at any stage during the week.